Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Our topic today is the future of the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. To guide its development for the next 20 years, the airport is updating its master plan. That process has been going on since July of 2012. By this September, the plan had become a single proposal with four phases, each one triggered by demand. There's a lot of interest in this master plan. Three community councils board of the airport. A number of popular parks and green belts are adjacent to it, including Kincaid Park, Point Warrensoff Park, and the Tony Knowles Coastal Trail. So what's in the plan? What triggers these different phases? And where are the points of tension between the airport and its neighbors and those who use the green belts and parks that surround it? Please welcome our hosts, our guest today, Evan Thaler. Hi, Evan.
Hi.
Project manager for the airport's master plan, and John Parrott, director of the airport.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to you both. I think what we're here, there was a paragraph I read in something that just puts us right here where we are with you in the studio and people coming to public meetings and open forums to talk to the airport. So this is this paragraph. As Anchorage residential housing has developed up to the airport's boundaries from the outside, and aviation development and operations have expanded toward airport boundaries from the inside, incompatible land use and operational issues have intensified. At the same time, the airport faces stiff competition from other airports worldwide and must fulfill its obligations under FAA grant assurances to accommodate airport growth and development. Meanwhile, nearby residents are asking, when is enough enough, and seeking to restrain airport growth to protect their quality of life. The municipality, the airport, its tenants, the FAA, and community councils must continue to work together to find land use solutions that reduce conflicts and maintain the economic vitality of the airport. So that's kind of a good case statement for us. Would you agree?
I think so. I think the real salient point there is where it says the municipality, the communities, and the airport must work together.
Mm-hmm.
No single entity owns a solution or the solution.
There's no silver bullet.
To these absolutely, difficult issues to find solutions to.
Yeah, yeah. So what I thought I'd do with our program today is kind of divide it. I thought we would explore what the master plan process is at the outset, because the airport's an interesting entity. It's not like, doesn't belong to the city, for example. So we'll talk about that. Why is it having a master plan process? And then after we talk about that, we'll probably go into what this draft master plan says. And I made Evan promise not to give us all the numbers, or we'll all be crawling under the table. So he's,
I promise.
We're going to talk about it in terms of concepts, like what does each concept mean? And then the second half of the show, I really want to turn to where the sticking points are. And so I wanted our listeners to know that in case they have something they want to talk about. They can call anytime, but we're planning to get to some of those community issues in the second half of the show. I'm going to throw out the number for folks. It is 550-8433 if you're in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 if you're outside of Anchorage, or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I also like to let folks know that alaskapublic.org, we've put lots of links that are useful to people. If they get interested in the program and they want to drill down a little bit more, they can find things on our website. We're going to point them to the airport's master plan website, various things like that. So there's a few airport facts that I thought would be fun to throw out, because, you know, we use it, we all come and go from the airport, but it's been around, John, since 1951?
Yes, that's correct.
And in 1961, the federal government gave the state of Alaska control of the airport and set up a special...
Well, actually, the state had assumed control of the airport prior to that, but in 1961, the legislature established a relatively unique entity, the Alaska International Airport System, which was comprised and is comprised of the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport and the Fairbanks International Airport as a two-airport system.
We have a twin in Fairbanks.
We do. And that's not unusual. Los Angeles has an airport system. Washington, D.C. has an airport system. Houston has an airport system. Groups of airports that have been put together for governance purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Anchorage and Fairbanks airports, we don't compete with each other. We compete as a team against other airports for air service, both cargo and passenger. And we work cooperatively together because there are some real advantages in having that other airport at the end of a 9.5 hour flight over the Pacific Ocean.
You don't have to turn around and go back.
It's a long flight back, and uh-huh. and having that other airport there as a safety valve is very important to both of us.
Yeah, for both of us. So a few other facts. The airport, Ted Stevens, includes mm-hmm. Lake Hood, but your master plans are done differently because there's such different audiences.
Right.
Globally, this airport, Anchorage I'm talking about, is in the top five cargo movers in the world. It supports 1 in 10 jobs. It's a major cargo hub between Asia and North America.
Yes.
In 2004, Senator Ted Stevens made cargo transfer legal in Alaska and Hawaii, which meant foreign carriers could land here and exchange their cargo to either their own planes that are operating in the U.S. or to other carriers, although that hasn't been the boon that it was hoped for, right, John?
It has not become the predominant business model, in part because it is so unique. We are the only place where that can be done. Geographically, we're the only place practically in the world where it makes any sense. But we do have a number of carriers who historically have done some cargo transfer and are currently doing some cargo transfer. So we see it as a yet untapped business opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And the last little fact I wanted to throw out there is that airport demand peaked for passengers around 2008 and for cargo around 2006. But the global economy that has kind of collapsed and is still in the process of rebuilding itself, Anchorage felt that, and so our airport is not busting out.
That's correct. Our traffic is currently significantly down from where it was at those peaks, and so we're able to relatively comfortably handle the current traffic demand that we have, particularly on the cargo side. The passenger side, if anybody flew this summer during the Red Eye Bank, you'll notice the terminal is pretty full in the middle of the night.
Feels about noontime when you walk into in a restaurant. Yeah.
But that's a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm. So we've come to the part of the program where we want to dive into what is the process, what is it not. I think the airport, because of its unique character, people who live next to it want to influence it a lot. And I would say the airport has really reached out to the community and had, I think we're on our 7th public meeting, right?
December 11th. Seventh one, yeah.
So I happened to go to the September 12th one and heard Evan speak nonstop for about 2 hours. Very impressive. Tell us about what the process is about. And by the way, I didn't tell people, Evan, you live in Anchorage, but you actually work for a design firm that helps agencies do things like this?
That's right. I work for a company that specializes in preparing aviation plans for airports. We do some civil engineering, architecture, environmental planning, and master planning for airports. And I focus strictly on the master planning element.
I was going to ask you, you know, like, are you flying up here? Do you have frequent flyer miles from Virginia? But you're actually living here for a year.
Well, I did live here for a year. My family and I relocated out of Alaska a couple of months ago, so I have been flying up the last couple of months, but it was a wonderful experience and glad to have had it. And I hope it made a positive impact.
They're
on
still
the
friends.
Master plan.
Yeah. And John, I just didn't know much about your background. You're a graduate of the Air Force Academy. Mm-hmm. You flew F-4s at Elmendorf right out of school?
I did. That was my first operational assignment. I fell in love with Alaska and said when I retire from the Air Force, that's where I'm going to go live.
Yeah.
So I did.
And you came back in 98.
Yep.
Went right to work for the airport.
I was very fortunate.
Your way up to the top.
Very fortunate. I got a job at the airport, and I kept raising my hand as people kept leaving, and I've been very, very fortunate.
Okay. So I wanted folks to kind of know who you are. So back to you, the master plan process.
The master plan process is something that is it's dictated by the FAA in the sense that they want all major airports in the United States to have a master plan on the shelf. What it does is it enables the airport itself to make smart decisions about future development, to be prepared for the future. But it really is a tool not just for the airport, but also for the FAA, which is why, number one, the FAAA requires it, and number two, the FAAA funds the vast majority of the cost of doing the master plan, because they're making development decisions and making financial investment decisions for airports across the country. And for the FAAA to be able to do that consistently and efficiently, there needs to be a master plan that they can reference and have a sense of how much development funding each airport in the United States is going to require.
It's the
over
string
time.
Attached to their money.
Exactly.
And I noticed that it's in what I read. They say the FAA encourages a master plan, but it's more than encourage, right? It's required.
It's essentially the best way to think about it is yes, it's encouraged as opposed to required. But in reality, the airport would be unable to get the kinds of FAA funding it ultimately needs to make these infrastructure investments without having a master plan in place. If you can't justify a development decision or a project, then you're not going to get the money to make that investment. So if you don't have a master plan, you don't have to have a master plan, but if you don't have a master plan, then you're not going to be in a position to take advantage of the FAA's ability to provide those grants and aid.
Be a nice wallet.
Exactly.
You know, as I read, this is a paragraph that comes out of off your website that's talking about the master plan. It says, the primary emphasis of the master plan update is to position the airport strategically for the future. The goal of the plan is to advance operational efficiency and business effectiveness, as well as to maximize available resources and property availability for aviation development through efficient planning. The planning team will seek to identify and validate future facility and infrastructure requirements to meet anticipated passenger cargo operational demands. This seems to me to be a development plan, not a land use plan, really. It's a development. It's an economic development plan. Am I right?
I think that's a good way of characterizing it, yes.
And kind of driven by the FAA saying, make wise use of our money?
Exactly. I mean, it's a comprehensive plan. We look forward, and we want to know what's going to be needed in the near term, the medium term, the long term, and how much those needs are going to cost the airport, going to cost the FAA, and ensure mm-hmm. that ultimately, you know, the airport operates safely and efficiently today. We want the airport to operate safely and efficiently in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years. This is one tool the FAA and the airport has to ensure that safe and efficient operation is enabled for the next couple of
right.
decades.
So I heard you at the September, I sat through that, and one of the things that was stated right up front was we have forecasts, airport activity forecast.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all agreed to them. We agreed to them in June of 2012, because this airport master plan has been going on since June of 2012, right? So there were committees that were involved in this. There was a technical committee, there were environmental, neighborhood, all kinds of committees that were working from June 2012 through now. Here's my question about those forecasts. If, in fact, it's an economic development plan, when does the public actually get to say that question? We don't want you to get any bigger. We think it's big enough now. It doesn't seem like if we all are working off those forecast numbers, they don't actually get to affect those forecast numbers.
Well, let's think back to what a forecast is. So first of all, the way that this project was carried out was a little bit unique among how master plans are typically done. The forecast of aviation demand was conducted as part of that statewide system plan that John alluded to earlier. So one forecast was prepared for Anchorage International Airport, for Fairbanks International, and actually Lake Hood as well. That study was actually completed before this master plan began, and we shared those numbers with the public in June of 2012. The same numbers, the same forecast data is being used by this master plan, by the master plan in Fairbanks, which is concurrent to our master plan. It's also being used, the data is being used by a noise study here and a noise study in Fairbanks. And eventually, Lake Hood's master plan will be updated. The same forecast will support.
It gets everybody on the same page.
Everybody's on the
exactly.
same page. All of the, you know, there's no difference in what numbers we're using. So we have consistency. We have, I think, a better sense of validation of the numbers that we're using for all of these studies that are ongoing currently. So what does that mean for the airport? What does it mean for the public? The forecast is a very technical study. So there isn't public involvement, but there's stakeholder involvement. The airlines were at the table, and in fact, when this forecast was done, the airlines had a more vocal role in this forecast than probably has ever been conducted before. They were allowed to look at drafts of the forecast before it was finalized. Yeah. And typically, the FAA reviews and accepts the forecast for use in these planning studies. That happened this time. But in addition, the state asked that we submit the forecast to the airlines, allow them to review and accept the forecast for the use in these planning studies, and that's what the airlines did. And what I want to distinguish it is that the FAA and the airlines don't state that the forecasts are necessarily accurate and that the future is going to unfold exactly as predicted in the forecast, but they agree that the forecast is reasonable, that the study was sound, and that they accept the forecast to be used for these planning and noise studies. That's the distinction that we need to make. And so the public can say, we don't believe in the forecast is going to unfold as predicted. But ultimately, that remains to be seen. Nobody knows. It's a forecast.
Right. And when I went through on your website, great documentation of all the people who've come to your hearings or open forums and commented. People asked lots of questions about those forecasts, and they challenged them, and they talked mm-hmm. about the 2006 downturn. And I think that the reaction might be like, well, we've set the bar there, so that's where we're going. Mm-hmm. And it's this question of, but we don't want the bar that high. We don't want that, you know, level of traffic. How do we tell the airport we don't want that? Now, this gets into what John was talking mm-hmm. about, which is, you know, we have neighbors next door to the airport, but we also are part of the airport is part of a larger, you know.
Global transportation system.
And the FAA, it's part of the national.
Yes.
Air transportation system.
So,
right.
But I think that's a frustration for people. I mean, I think it's okay to acknowledge that, because as you go through the master plan, you know, we get to adding a runway because that's the only way that we will accommodate those numbers should they arrive.
Right.
And so I think people feel like it's a foregone conclusion, or they didn't get to tell you they didn't want the airport that big.
Right, and I think there are a couple points that need to be made here. First of all, in a traditional master plan in history, some airports have looked at a forecast and said, well, this forecast says that in 3 years we're going to hit this activity level, therefore we will build some piece of infrastructure to accommodate that, assuming the forecast is going to happen. And we've been very, very emphatic that we do not plan to start building anything right now. We believe we need to see significant, sustained growth in traffic before we need to build that piece of infrastructure, because we have a couple alternatives. We can use our airport better. We can use our system of airports better. So we're not planning to build anything based on a timeline of a forecast. We're planning to prepare to build things if and when needed based on observed growth and the amount of time it takes to plan that infrastructure. So mm-hmm. we're not looking at a calendar and saying, okay, we're going to build things. The other important part is the master plan is not approval by any entity to build that project. There is an incredibly extensive NEPA process that would be required before that runway is built, which takes into account to a large degree, the desires and the negative impacts on the neighborhood, the environment, wildlife. All of those issues must be dealt with and mitigated to the satisfaction of federal entities before you can go out and build something like that.
Right. In doing some background reading in local media, I saw that in 2002 there was an effort to get here. In 2008 there was an effort, and by mm-hmm. to get here I mean add that north-south runway. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen in 2002.
Actually, there is a second runway on the 2002.
As a result.
It's a closely spaced runway, which upon further analysis with the current fleet mix, the current use of the airport, and the predicted use of the airport, does not provide a significant increase in capacity for the cost.
So we built it, but it didn't actually...
No, we put it on a plan.
Uh-huh. And then didn't build
and it. And said, that's not what we need. And now, if we need one in the future, we need one that gives us significant capacity, which would be the widely spaced one that is in our current
and
development
plan. And
then in
2008, that came up again. There was an attempt at a master plan. Why didn't we go forward even with a master plan then?
If you remember back to the latter part of 2008 and going into 2009, the global economic downturn, I believe is the polite term for it,
the clash
happened, and cargo traffic disappeared, economies disappeared, and clearly once we saw that happen, there was no need not only to build a runway, but in fact we terminated the effort on the master plan because things were changing so quickly and were so volatile that we at the airport felt we needed to try to wait until there was some kind of stability in the global economy before we tried to predict the future and see what we needed
right,
to do.
Right, right. You know, this is not a land swap program, but one of the questions that really comes up for the public is why are we even talking about swapping land if we're not even
talking yet about building? Why are we doing land, potential land exchange, when we're not even at the point yet of knowing if we need this airport? We've this runway. We've backed off of it from before because the indicators weren't there. But we seem to be getting the land taken care of. Or are we?
Well, there's, you know, there are two sides to a trade. The municipality has some significant land needs where they're currently using airport land that they need to have a long-term interest in so they can make some improvements. The snow dump on the east end of the airport, just east of Jewel Lake and south of International, is airport property and a municipal snow dump, as is the Connors Bog Dog Park. Those are areas that the municipality would like to own. Little Campbell Lake, a recreational area. There's some desire from a number of people that the municipality own that instead of the airport owning it. So the land trade is a comprehensive look at, and we haven't had the first meeting yet, as suggested by the West Anchorage District Plan, municipal planning effort, not an airport effort. But there are pieces of property that the ownership of the property and the use of the property aren't very well aligned. And so it's not all about the airport trying to grab land off to the west. It's about the airport as a state entity and the municipality and the surrounding communities and recreational users trying to sit down and resolve some of these ownership use incongruities.
Yeah. And it just happens to be that they're popular. They're all popular.
Absolutely.
But I kind of leaped ahead. I partly because we were talking about not building an airport, a runway until we need it, and yet it feels as if we're swapping land already or we're getting ready to. But really, what I wanted to go back to you, Evan, and actually, if anybody's just joined us, I just want them to know that our topic is the Airport Master Plan, if you couldn't tell. And we have Evan Thaler, Project Manager, and John Parrott, who's the Director of the airport. So let's walk people in about 10 minutes through those four phases, if you will.
Sure.
Evan.
So as we have spent about the last 15 months working through the master plan, we have a forecast, as we talked about earlier. We did kind of an assessment of the existing facilities at the airport. We looked at what the needs would be to accommodate that forecast growth, looked at a number of alternatives, and the plan we've arrived at is one that recognizes that today, the airport continues to operate relatively efficiently and it operates safely, and so there's not a need to make a whole lot of changes in today's environment. But on the other hand, we have a forecast that suggests that at some point within the next couple of decades, that the airport might experience a significant amount of growth, and it might be necessary for us to make some major changes at the airport. So how do we resolve that today versus tomorrow? And so this plan that we have, the draft development plan, has been called a demand-dependent phased approach. But in reality, it's kind of a continuum of development that allows the airport to adapt to changing environment for landings and takeoffs, for passenger growth, and for cargo throughput. In an initial phase, at the outset of this continuum, if you will, what we would expect to see is very little in the way of change. We would make some improvements to the airfield to meet the FAA's latest airport design standards as set forth by FAA. And we would do some small projects around the airport to, in fact, lessen some of the impacts the airport has on neighbors. One of the facilities we're looking at implementing is something called a ground run-up enclosure. This is a three-sided building that essentially allows engine maintenance to occur on airplanes, but it sort of muffles the sound so that we have a reduced noise impact on nearby communities.
What borders that? What neighborhoods border that?
Well, the airport, Turnagain, Sand Lake, and Spinard, but the ground run-up enclosure itself is proposed to go in an area called the Turnagain Bog. So it's about Postmark Bog, just north of the terminal area on the west side of Postmark Drive.
Okay. So that's phase one.
That's kind of the outset of this plan. And if we were to see additional growth and as a result of that growth see some additional congestion occur, then we would move on to a phase where we might make some changes to the terminal. One of the main challenges this master plan had was, what do we do with the North Terminal? This is a facility that is 300,000 square feet. It was built in 1982. That was used for international transit passengers, which don't occur here anymore. what do we do with that building? And the answer through this master plan is that that building ultimately needs to come down, at least the concourse portion of it does. And when we do that, we consolidate all passenger operations into the South Terminal so that everybody who flies through Anchorage International Airport has a very high level of customer service. They're able to use all of the concessions in the South Terminal and enjoy that facility. It's a beautiful facility. Everybody who comes through Anchorage International Airport, I think we want to have experience that high
Best
level of service.
Forward.
Absolutely.
Actually, it points out the volatility of airports because we built a building because we had European travel coming here. And I remember the day when SAS and Air France and all that was coming through here. They're not coming anymore because, I guess, of fuel changes?
Because the Russians opened up their airspace.
Okay, so suddenly we've got a building, and we have to do something else with it.
Right, and that building, you know, it was paid for. It served its purpose.
Yeah.
I don't think it's...
It wasn't wasted. It was needed when it was built.
It was needed when it's built, but it served its purpose, and it's time to take the next step. On the airport side, or I should say on the air side, the runway side, in this initial phase, what we want to do is really prioritize kind of a low-cost mechanism for allowing us to make better use of our existing three runways. So what do? We allow runway 7 left, which is one of the east-west runways, to accommodate more jet departures. What this would do is during the afternoons, not at night, but during the afternoons, we would enable additional jet departures out over the community to the east of the airport. What this ultimately does is allow air traffic control to alleviate some congestion at the airport during peak periods in the afternoon, but it doesn't happen all the time, and it doesn't happen at nighttime. And it's a very low-cost way for us to make better use of the existing three runways the airport has.
Could those hours be changed if the demand grew?
Well, we have a preferential runway use program in place with the express purpose of reducing the airport's noise in the community. And we're not proposing to go to do away with the program, but simply to modify it. So, again, you know, at nighttime, we wouldn't be making any changes. And I think the airport, you know, ultimately respects the fact that at nighttime, there's a much higher degree of sensitivity to airport noise and the influence the airport has, the impact the airport has in the community. So during the daytime, we think this is a reasonable compromise. At nighttime, we're not there yet.
And I think on September 12th at that open forum, you said within the next 10 years, we likely will need phase one and phase two.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. Even in the nearer term, you know, in the next few years, we see these peak periods. Anchorage International operates in kind of an unusual way where we have this very busy period that occurs in the afternoon. So even though the airport on an annual basis is not always congested, it happens to have these very significant
also
peaks of activity.
Also 1 a.m. in the morning.
1 a.m. in the morning for passengers.
That's when I fly.
Right. We see now on some afternoons, we'll see 8 or 10 airplanes lined up waiting to take off. For that afternoon departure push. And we know that sometimes 2 hours before that, they've been stacked up in the air waiting to come in and land. So it's this phase two is not throw the switch and suddenly hundreds of airplanes are taking off on 7 left. It would be as we see on particular days congestion occur and seeing those delays, we would work with the air traffic control tower and allow them to better utilize 7 left to keep the traffic flowing efficiently.
Mm-hmm. So actually, we're going to take a little break.
Okay.
We didn't get through all the four phases, but we're going to come back and finish two of those. If you just joined us, this is a really good program. It's the Anchorage International, Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport Master Plan under discussion. We have Evan Thaler, project manager for the master plan, and John Parrott with us. And when we come back after this little break, we're going to finish up discussing what the phases of the master plan are.
Okay.
And then we're going to go into some of the sticking points in more detail. So when we come back, I'll give you the number. So if you have questions for Evan or John, you can call us and let us know. So in the meantime, you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org. Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. We're talking about the Anchorage, the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. Really struggling to get that right.
That's taken me a year. So.
Yeah. And I have two guests in the studio who happen to be really knowledgeable about this master plan. It's still underway. The goal is to finish it up by December 2013, which is right around the corner. There's been a lot of public input. There's been a lot of public comment. So we have Evan Failer, project manager, John Parrott, director. I wanted to throw out the phone numbers. We were discussing, why aren't people calling? We expected people to call. And John says, I think they all came to the open forums. And maybe that's true, because they were well attended. But at any rate, the number is 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. Or you can send an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So when we broke off, I had said to Evan, give us a 10-minute rundown on the master plan. It's still in draft form. I asked John when we were sitting here before the program, did the input from the public change anything? But before I derail you, I want you to just continue with phase three and phase four. And if there's anything you need to tell us about what's changed based on public input.
So the first two phases, a minimal development phase and then what we call the optimize the existing airport phase, where we try to make better use of the airport's existing infrastructure. So in a third phase, what we would do is try to optimize the system. We, at the beginning of the show, talked about the Alaska International Airport System. It's a two-airport system that consists of both Anchorage International and Fairbanks International Airports. The airlines that operate at these airports have a single lease and use agreement that works at both airports. How do we make better use? How do we optimize the use of the two airports? What we are proposing in this third phase of development is that the airport and the airlines work together to encourage increased use by cargo or freight aircraft that are stopping in Anchorage to do nothing but refuel and change crews. Those are sort of the perfect types of activity to consider using Fairbanks International Airport. And this isn't about stopping folks from coming to Anchorage and sending them off to Fairbanks, but accommodating that growth. We expect to see more growth. And instead of having those aircraft come to Anchorage in the first place, have them utilize the facilities at Fairbanks, which the International Airport System Planning Study already showed could occur without a significant impact on Fairbanks International Airport. They have the runway capacity to accommodate it. They have the fueling capacity. But there are, if that turns out to be successful, there would need to be some additional infrastructure improvements at Fairbanks International Airport, which would, of course, have an economic, would cost the system some development dollars as well. It may require some encouragement or some incentivization monies to encourage that kind of activity. So what we did is prioritize the optimization of Anchorage International, which is a low or no cost alternative, before phase three, the optimization of the system, to prioritize the lower no cost alternative first.
And I think one of the visitors to the open forum said, why don't you put three in front of two?
Right.
What's the answer to that?
Exactly that. We wanted to prioritize the type of development that would have a lower cost or potentially no cost in front of a decision that would potentially require some investment dollars. So
and
that's
the answer.
And I also
remember from that forum that it takes the airlines jumping on board. I mean, there's incentives,
that's
but
right.
They still, and I think we have 41 cargo airlines coming in here, is that right?
It varies week by week as airlines are started and go bankrupt. But we currently have 31 signatory airlines, and over a year ago, we started some incentive programs to try to get the occasional airport users to start using Fairbanks. So phase three in our master plan is really an effort to optimize the use of the system that we've already been looking at.
Uh-huh.
So neither phase two or phase three is really something startling and new. These are things that we have had discussions with local air traffic control and with Fairbanks and with our airline customers. We've been discussing these as options. Now we've documented the capacity they might provide, and just codified them and formalized them.
Mm-hmm.
But these options already existed and were being explored.
Yeah. At the September 12th open house, I remember someone saying, but why would we send business to Fairbanks?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was that fear that somehow
so that we can get more business here.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah. So now let's go to Phase four.
So this is a phase whereby if we see continued growth in operations and a growth in congestion, I mean, that's really the factor. If we have congestion occurring at the airport, the FAA, the airport, we don't want that. We want these airline customers, this activity, to continue coming to Alaska and making an economic impact. So if we are at that point, then we feel it's justified to expand Anchorage International Airport by constructing another runway, a north-south runway, about 3,500 feet to the west of the existing north-south runway. This runway would allow the international airport to operate in all weather conditions and basically have a significant increase in capacity. An interesting fact now about the airport today is that in spite of the fact that it has three runways, no two runways can be operated independently. They all kind of have to be operated with respect for one another. Now, when if we had a second north-south runway that were widely spaced, the airport would have the luxury, quite frankly, of having two runways that can operate essentially independently in all conditions, and that's a significant capacity enhancement. Albeit, this is an alternative, or this is a phase of development that also has significant impacts, and we've been very open about what those impacts are, and recognize the fact that this development would have to go through an extensive study of those impacts and mitigation effort as well.
Right, and that kind of brings us, I guess, to the sticking points,
sure.
And certainly we know the Coastal Trail is one, and I guess the problem dates historically when the airport allowed use. The municipality and the airport make arrangements. The Coastal Trail is very popular. The airport says, okay, you can. And as we were discussing before the show, it's very hard to take away something that people have learned to love.
Sure.
And I think, Evan, you have said if phase four happened, we would definitely be mitigating the Coastal Trail. But that's like we're so far away from that. We don't know what that would look like.
It's far into the future. And I think one of the most common questions we've heard at our open houses is, well, why aren't you showing where the Coastal Trail is going to be? What are you going to do with the Coastal Trail? And there's an answer to that. And the answer is that, number one, the airport is absolutely committed to maintaining a contiguous Coastal Trail. So without a question, the folks who love the Coastal Trail will be able to get from Earthquake Park or downtown out to Kincaid Park using the Coastal Trail in the future, with or without a runway. But second to that, we could have done through this process, we could have put out there a concept for mitigating impacts to the Coastal Trail. But if we had done that, we'd be essentially dictating to the public and to trail users what we think the right solution is to mitigate impacts to the Coastal Trail. We know the trail is going to be impacted if this runway were ever developed. And at that time, when a decision is made to even build the runway, and we're not at that time yet, but when that decision is made, then the user groups, the municipality, parks and recreation, the community need to be at the table, and they need to work with the airport, all having an equal voice, helping determine how the most effective way of mitigating impacts to the trail can be carried out. We don't know exactly what that would look like, and so it's unreasonable for us to dictate again to the community. What we did do, though, at our September 12th open house is present several best practices for trail design and coastal trails and putting trails in areas that are adjacent to sort of transportation and industrial uses. And we intend to document some of the best trail practices and design principles from throughout the world, not just the United States, but throughout the world. And that includes, you know, several trail projects in Scandinavia where there's a lot of cross-country skiing, and we know there's a variety of users on this trail. It's something that we recognize as being important, and these are all users that would have to be accommodated in the future when this happens.
Let's talk a little bit about Point Warrensov Park, which I believe was given, was traded or to the city around the time Sand Lake Element. It had to do with
it was part of a previous land trade.
Yes,
that was before any of our
and now
time
it's
at the
it's dedicated parkland, and so some people are saying, well, that couldn't be changed without a vote in the city of Anchorage. Is that true?
That would be a question for the city attorney. That is a municipality question that quite frankly I've heard that said. It certainly may be true, but that's not my area of expertise.
Another thing that comes up on this is at September 12th, so many people, and they may be certain people, but many people stood up and said, why is phase four in there when we've told you we don't want it? And another part of that is if you're looking at a master plan and we're going to do another master plan in 5 or 7 years, but yet we're looking 20 or 30 years out, not 20 years out, not 30 years out. Really.
20 years, right. Mm-hmm.
Why would we insist on having that now? Why can't we watch the numbers develop?
I think this is a great question. Why think about it now? From my perspective, I think we're being very respectful of the public process and being honest by putting this out there, as opposed to keeping it as, you know, sort of under wraps as maybe the airport's secret plan. Not what we're doing. We're getting out there and saying, you know, this is the reality. If the airport continues to grow, if the airport sees increases in traffic and in congestion, this is a way to resolve that and maintain the safe and efficient operation of the airport for many, many years to come. And so I think if we have that discussion starting now and have it over many, many years, when the need to actually consider something of this magnitude actually presents itself, we will have had a long time to think about it and to sort of come to terms with what this means for the future of Anchorage and for the future of this airport. So from my perspective as a planner, this is what planning is all about. It's fundamental to the process. Looking forward, putting on the table what we need to do in order to accommodate traffic, which is, again, our fundamental goal in the master planning process, and having an open and honest conversation with the airlines, with the community about what the future of this airport might actually look
right.
like.
So it gets to that discussion, John, you and I were having a little bit about the neighborhood isn't the most important constituency. It's a constituency.
Mm, absolutely.
Because what's frustrating about such an open process is people think they can affect it. And I think they're feeling like they can't affect it. So that's the rub there. You know, you've done a really good job of saying, hey, this is really how we're thinking, and if the numbers show, this is what we're going to do. And yet the public feels like they can affect that.
And they have. There have been changes made. There have been, looking at the different phases and which one comes first, second, or do they become a continuum? How do we accommodate certain aspects of them, the ground run-up enclosure to minimize noise from engine runs, the public committal to a contiguous coastal trail? I think, unfortunately, no member of the public that has attended those meetings has probably looked at the plan and said, that's exactly how I would have done it. It's probably not exactly how I would have done it if I had a blank slate and didn't need to take a lot of things into consideration. So I know it's frustrating in a lot of cases like this. If you're the folks that live right next to any kind of transportation or industrial development, those who live nearest it get most of the negative impacts, such as they are. And I think we're working very hard to mitigate those. But those are not our only constituents, as you said. We serve the entire city of Anchorage. We serve the entire state of Alaska. We serve the entire country's transportation system and, in fact, are a fairly significant node in the global air transportation system.
Right, which is very economically driven. And you have people who live in Anchorage and think they like it the way it is now. They don't want to see it change.
But a lot of those people like the jobs they have at the airport, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's some other issues that I know we want to talk about. Another one of them is the AWWU, which is the Anchorage Waste and Wastewater Utility. And I would like to know here's my understanding in brief. We have primary treatment here, which means we put a lot into the inlet, and because it's so turbulent, it kind of cleans things up, and our water quality stays where the EPA, I guess, is comfortable with it. But if it were to change, that agency would be required to go to secondary or maybe tertiary treatment. And they have land set aside for that, which is part of what...
They do. Uh-huh. They do. And there are a number of things. As we're well aware in the airport industry, the Environmental Protection Agency can change the rules that govern current situations at virtually any point in time. So there might be no change in anything other than the EPA requirements, and AWWU might have to go to additional treatment. There could be changes caused potentially by a fourth runway. There could simply be changes caused by the amount of wastewater generated by the city of Anchorage. We have very little idea, I think, right now, which will come first, a requirement for AWWU to expand their treatment facility or a fourth runway. I would not bet any of my own money on either one of those happening first. As a result, we have been in discussions with AWWU, and we both want to make sure that neither one of us precludes fiscally responsible development as required by the other entity. Mm-hmm. We have absolutely no desire to build a runway and taxiway structure that would preclude or put an undue financial burden on AWWU if they have to expand to secondary or tertiary treatment. We believe they also understand that if they were to expand first, they need to take into account the potential future needs of the airport for a taxiway and runway system. And although we're governed by different entities, we are right next to each other and need to work together to ensure the best outcome for both.
So are you suggesting that both could, there's enough land there for both of them to get what they need?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So one would not stop the other in either case.
The existing boundaries of the property may not be the most efficient moving forward, but we believe there is, and we've had conversations with them, we absolutely believe there is enough land for both to do these future developments.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller, and I always try to put our callers on. Welcome. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Kathleen.
Is this Kathy Gleason?
It is.
Okay. You want to talk about Point Warren's off the Coastal Trail? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I want to refer back to earlier discussion about the reference to the land swap and Mr. Parrott saying that there's some misalignment about how what kind of needs the municipality has with regard to property they're now currently using at the airport. And he referenced the snow dump and Connor's Bog and Little Campbell Lake, and that's all certainly applicable. But the one thing that he left out that's very significant is there is no misalignment on how the community wants to use, is using, and wants to see retained into, you know, ad infinitum, the municipal ownership of dedicated parkland, Point Warren's Off Park, and the municipally owned coastal trail that runs through there. I mean, that exists now. That's status quo. And the community has certainly spoken out loud and clear. They want that to continue. So that doesn't really align with a land swap to resolve the municipality's desire to have those other important areas under municipal ownership. There's got to be some other way to resolve those issues if necessary.
Right.
The good thing is the current proposed master plan does not indicate airport development in any of those areas now leased by the municipality in 20 years. So while it would be an ideal scenario for those to be in municipal ownership, there's no pressing need for them to be under municipal ownership. So I think that's a real disconnect that wasn't addressed.
And there is the municipality, as John has said, it's in their bailiwick. They have a task force that's forming right now. I've had a conversation with Thede Tobish at the city, and I have invited them to come on to Hometown Alaska and discuss the whole West Anchorage district plan. And I guess there's more to come on all of that is my sense of it, right?
Well, it's my understanding. I don't have any details about that effort. My concern is that there is an unneeded push right now by the municipality and the airport to go through with some kind of land swap that would take away a municipally dedicated parkland from the public now and put it into the hands of the airport. And as we heard multiple times during discussions during the West Anchorage District Plan, once property is owned by the airport and is under airport management, they can do pretty well whatever they want with that land. And we would lose complete control over that wonderful parkland that is now dedicated and belongs to the municipality and that beautiful, fully wooded, wonderfully natural area of the Coastal Trail.
Well, here's one question I have, Kathy, and John and Evan chime in. I looked at those two parcels. There's like 191 acres at Point Warren's Off Park. There's 26 acres at that snow dump. That isn't really an exchange. I mean, they don't seem to be weighted the same way. One is a city park. One is rented snow dump space. Mm-hmm. So why is there so much pressure right now on that?
Well, there are a number of pieces to this puzzle. First of all, I would offer that while Kathy may think that if the airport owns the property, we can do anything we want with it at any point in time, she's clearly never been through the permitting process that we have to go through to do airport development. There are a number of steps, including the environmental process, which requires us to meet a number of standards. The city snow dump is one of the pieces of property that the city has expressed interest in because, quite frankly, they'd rather not pay rent. They'd rather own. And they're going to have to invest some money in that facility to meet the EPA standards. And they don't want to sell bonds or generate revenue to do those improvements unless they know they're going to use that property for some number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So you take the snow dump, you take the Connors Bog Dog Park, you take Little Campbell Lake, you take potentially some other property that's south of Raspberry Drive. And it's not an acre-for-acre trade. It would have to be, per the FAA grant assurances and guidelines that we have to operate under, like economic value in any land trade that were to be mm-hmm. worked out.
You know, I'm outside the whole thing, and until I went to the September 12th, it was my introduction to everything. But a much-loved park versus a snow dump, they just don't, I feel like we could find places to dump snow, you know? I mean, the municipality could, and I know it's not your job to worry about that, John, you're the airport. But at any rate, I it just feels to me like that's still going to be debated quite a bit.
No doubt.
And I think it's just making people nervous because it feels like it's going to happen now, which would allow the north-south runway to be, that land would then be in the airport. You know, it's like a done deal. And those are the kinds of, do people trust government? Do they, you sort of always want them to have that. And
I think I can, people should feel rest assured that even if the airport owns land, that's not an automatic, green light for development. The airport has to go through a number of steps in order to have the right to develop something of that magnitude, not least of which is going through whether they own the land or not. That's sort of immaterial to the discussion, quite frankly. But going through the National Environmental Policy Act, most likely an environmental impact statement, going through a negotiation process with the airlines to actually fund the development, ensuring that the funding is in place from the federal government. So in spite of the ease with which it might seem like the airport would have the ability to make development occur on land that they already own, the reality is that there's a many steps process that would have to be undertaken by the airport. And that's been proven throughout the United States when airports, whether they own land or not, when you have these big development projects using federal money, it's not an easy decision to make. It requires mm-hmm. a lot of study and analysis and forethought.
So you're kind of unbuckling the negotiations over that land swap with your phase four. You're sort of saying, if we needed it, we could get it anyway. If the federal government, if the FCC is saying,
I think what we're saying is, if you want to have a strategic plan for how you might get to somewhere or some goal in the long term, you don't wait and say, well, let's wait until we really need something before we look at where it might go and how we might use it. All we're saying is that if and when the state of Alaska and the FAA says we need more capacity at this airport, this is a runway that provides that. Whether or not that gets built depends on so many things mm-hmm. Between here and there that it's anything but a done deal.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying if it shows up in the master plan, and you've said this over and over, there are so many more steps we have, but it doesn't get some kind of legitimacy because it's in the master plan? Does it get legitimacy because it's in the master plan?
What the master plans, we submit something to the FAA called an airport layout plan, and the FAA will provide what they call a conditional approval. And therein lies the sort of magic word. It's a conditional approval, not a blanket approval. And the FAA basically says, yes, that this plan meets the standards. It's a reasonable plan for meeting demand. It's been thought through. The justification is there if and when that demand materializes. But we're only approving it with a very important condition, and that's that, A, the demand must materialize, and B, you must go through all of the required steps, including that extensive environmental analysis before you have the unconditional approval to make that development. And even if we went through that process, and even if the FAA signed off, and even if a record of decision was achieved, if the airlines blocked it at that point, you still have another serious hurdle to overcome. Mm-hmm. So this is not, the master plan is the first step in the process, not the last. And I like to remember point out, it's a master plan, not a master reaction.
It's key. Also important to remember that two of the goals for a master plan, one is to reserve land for future development, such as a runway. The other is to open up land for development. If we know where the runway might go someday, then we know that the rest of the airport property between the existing runway and that runway, it may be open for development now if requested. And we've had people come in and want to do various types of development, and we've been unable to resolve with them where that development would go because we were unsure where a major piece of infrastructure like a runway might go.
Mm-hmm. I've got one more caller, and I want to bring him on. Hey. Hi, David.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for the program. Great show. And thanks to Mr. Failer and Mr. Parrott for coming on. Very interesting. I just wanted to follow up on something Mr. Parrott just said about the snow dump that the city leases. It sounded, by what you were saying, that you're characterizing the city's impetus for wanting to secure that property as being that they're hesitant to spend money on it unless they own it. So are you saying that the airport is willing to let them do the wastewater upgrades that they need to do there if they were to decide they'd like to do that?
I'm not sure I understand the question. If they were to have a long-term lease or a continued lease with the airport, we would certainly attempt to do what we can to make sure they can meet the EPA standards that they're bumping up against.
So, what's the problem? I know that the lease and management agreements for the property that you as airport management own and that the municipality uses, like the dog park and the snow dump and Lake Loop at Kincaid, used to be on longer-term leases. And now it's a very tentative agreement, is my understanding. How was that brought about? Was that something that the airport did or something that the city did? Or
The city has not renewed most of those leases, so they're in a month-to-month holdover status.
Oh, my God. David, thank you. I have to thank our guests. It's been a great hour. Thanks to the callers. Thanks to Evan Failer, Project Manager for the Airport Master Plan Update. John Parrott, thank you for coming on. Next week on Hometown Alaska, host Charles Wolforth will have a discussion on the Municipal Labor Ordinance with Ernie Hall, LV Gray Jackson, and the president of the Coalition of Municipal Unions. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Kristen Platt is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.